Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschool children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. This final Friday of the fourth week of the Tyranny Response Network's broadcasting. Again, our phone numbers here, 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Questions and comments may also be sent by email to questions@policyofliberty.net, questions@policyofliberty.net, and we welcome your questions and comments. Well, what a better way to start this morning with the but to start it with Chuck Baldwin. You know, I just love the former vice presidential candidate for the Constitution Party's commentaries. And he wrote in February 1st letter, "Freedoms lost under George W. Bush. Supporters and apologists for President George W. Bush will often assail my assertion that the Bush administration has done more to dismantle constitutional protections for our liberties than any president in modern memory. It seems that those people believe that until federal stormtroopers knock down the doors of their homes and drag them off to the gulags, they have lost no freedoms. Nothing could be further from the truth. If history is any teacher, it instructs us in the incremental process that elitists use to implement their totalitarian agenda. The first step is to use incessant, highly orchestrated propaganda. For all practical purposes, the major media in the United States is providing that propaganda. At the national level, there is hardly any investigative journalism going on. Instead, the National Press Corps has become little more than lazy lackeys for the White House. The second step is to lay the foundation for totalitarianism by passing legislation that may later be used against the citizenry. And that is exactly what the Bush administration has very successfully accomplished. It has very adroitly succeeded where the Clinton administration failed. For example, most conservatives would be surprised to learn that the Patriot Act in the Department of Homeland Security was the brainchild of one William Jefferson Clinton. However, a recalcitrant Republican Congress denied Clinton the opportunity to implement these plans. Of course, with the Republican, G.W. Bush, serving as president, that same Republican Congress was all too eager to pass these bills into law. The third step is to demonize and marginalize anyone and everyone who opposes the government's plans and ambitions. Such opponents are characterized as unpatriotic, obstructionist, uncompassionate, or even ungodly. Once again, the Bush minions have very skillfully done just that. Anyone who dares to oppose or even question Bush must be regarded as the enemies of America or even the enemies of God." And, of course, that would include the Tyranny Response Unit and the Tyranny Response Network. I suppose we have now become the enemies of God in the mind of some people, when, in fact, we are those who not only seek to glorify God, but are on the side of right and truth more than any other station and other network. Of course, the last step is to begin using the power and force of government to physically silence or remove those who are determined to require such treatment. And as Germany's National Socialists proved, that's the Nazis. By the time this happens, there is no one around who is capable of coming to the assistance of such people. For those who are willing to objectively analyze Bush's actions and policies, the truth is clearly seen. The president has systematically put in place laws, policies, and bureaucracies that can and will continue to strip the American citizenry of their constitutional protections and liberties. He gives you a number of examples of in which President Bush and his fellow Republicans in Congress have already expunged, he says, the rights of Americans. Freedom of association. Government may monitor religious and political institutions without suspecting criminal activity or to assist terror investigations. Freedom of information. Government has closed once public immigration hearings, has secretly detained hundreds of people without charges, and has encouraged bureaucrats to resist public records questions. Freedom of speech. Government may prosecute librarians or keepers of any other records if they tell anyone that the government subpoenaed information related on a terror investigation. Right to legal representation. Government may monitor federal prison jailhouse conversations between attorneys and clients and deny lawyers to Americans accused of crimes. Freedom from unreasonable searches. Government may search and seize Americans' papers and effects without probable cause to assist terror investigations. Right to a speedy trial and public trial. Government may jail Americans indefinitely without trial. Right to order, to liberty. Americans may be jailed without being charged or being able to confront witnesses against them. These rights have already been lost. Whether individual Americans have been personally subjected to the resultant tyranny or not, this doesn't change the fact that they have already lost these freedoms. This fact alone should be enough for any studious lover of liberty to be outraged that good men are compliant and unconcerned regarding G.W. Bush's propensity to trample constitutional freedoms bespeaks a great ignorance or a great apathy or both. And we really appreciate your commentary this morning, Chuck Baldwin. It's an excellent summary of many of the things we've lost here as Americans as a result of having this rhino in the White House, this Republican in name only. Well, we also have some other stories breaking in the news today that are of considerable interest. For instance, it says who is reporting this? WorldNetDaily.com reports that man battles state over working sons. Agency fines business owner thousands for using kids on the job. A Washington state family is about to lose their home after the Department of Labor and Industries hit the father with thousands of dollars in fines for having his underage sons work alongside him in the family business, doing things the state believes are dangerous for the young boys. In 2003, Joe Dottie was fined $34,000 by the agency for employing his then 11-year-old and 13-year-old sons, even though the boys did not fit what Dottie says are the criteria for official employment. Later, he was assessed $20,000 for unpaid workers' compensation insurance for his children and other workers, along with $87,000 in penalty. Since 1992, I had been moving houses as a general contractor, and as common for a self-employed father, I found the opportunity to take my boys and thought nothing strange of it, explains Dottie on his website, familiesatwork.org. I was involved in teaching our children, especially in the faith, and they would accompany me occasionally from time to time from the time they were weaned. We believe that children are a gift from the Lord to the parents and that we, not the state, have been given the responsibility to train them. And we would also agree with that here at the Tyranny Response Network, by the way. Dottie lists the violations of the Department of Labor and Schools Industry said he was guilty of. It was a $250 a day fine for them working during school hours, even though we legally set our own hours as homeschoolers. $500 a day for having no superior court judge permit. $1,000 per day for them working on a construction site on our private property. $1,000 a day for them working near our heavy equipment, plus $1,000 a day for them operating our backhoe, and $1,000 a day for being a helper on a public roadway. Dottie, who is the father of seven, says the department conspired with the Child Protective Services to take his son Zach from him when he visited the Labor and Industries building. Later, he says the agency secured a court order that directed all persons in active concert to remove Dottie's boys from the worksite or equipment. Commented Dottie, "Can you imagine that a neighbor or police can now forcibly remove your child from your family business and your private property because they worked with their dad?" The state agency, according to Dottie, told him, "You were the individual directing your son to do the activities, which determined an employment relationship." The officials claim, "Now my boys wanted to work with me, which is quite normal," writes Dottie. "Boys without constructive work opportunities frequently end up in trouble. In fact, every L&I worker we questioned said they had a job before age 12. Dottie says in the past, Department of Labor and Industries has argued against allowing parents to consider their children employees. Well, what a travesty of justice. This is a joke. This is horrible. It's not a joke. This is just it's more than a joke, I should say. It's a joke of in legal sense, but it's a tragedy. What a horror that in this great country, although we can't expect anything else from the state of Washington, that liberal mecca, but this is going on, that people who are homeschooling their kids and employing them in a sense or having them go along and work with their dad are being subject to the scrutiny of the Department of Labor and Child Services and having children taken away from them, being fined, put out of business. Folks, this is an attack against liberty-loving people. They're just using these other things as an excuse for a way to get at this good man who's trying to teach his faith and his principles and his work skills to his children, which is what God ordains him to do. He needed to rebel, and it was good that he rebelled against the state, as far as I'm concerned. You may not share that opinion. Maybe you think, if you're a good divine right of kings advocate, that this fellow should just submit and no longer take his kids to work with him, and maybe not even homeschool them. I don't know. But this is absolutely bizarre that we've come to this kind of degenerate level. And it goes right along with Chuck Baldwin's comments earlier. Can you imagine, could Jefferson have imagined what the United States would have come to in just shortly over 200 years after the signing of that great document, the Declaration of Independence? Slavery is here, folks. Tyranny is here. It's all around us. What are Christians going to do about it? Well, I'll tell you what they've done about it so far is they elected George W. Bush. And the tyrants that are now oppressing us, especially those who are homeschoolers and liberty lovers and those who are trying to uphold principle through the biblical standards which they cherish and hold dear. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview. We're coming up on a quick break. We'll be back in just a minute on the Tyranny Response Network.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead. Make your day.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NP Pros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, P-R-O-S as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's npros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Welcome back to the program. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview. We're here discussing the current tyrannies in the United States and of America. It gets worse and worse all the time, folks, and I want to challenge those of you who hold dear the American system, the Constitutional Republic, which I actually, in theory, hold dear as well. What time in history has political action, that is, a redress of grievances, voting for the correct people, trying to get proper laws passed and so forth, when is that in the history of America, the American civilization or any civilization, actually wrought more freedom? In other words, less government, more rights for people, better security for property, less crime, these sorts of things. When has that occurred? Let's take off the less crime part because you might find exceptions there. But when has government size, scope, power been diminished? The citizens' power, independence, sovereignty, and rights been expanded through a peaceful political process? I want you to think hard about that question, because I think if you are honest with history and you look at the battles that Thomas Jefferson fought just to barely keep for the first 20 years the country in a state of independence as envisioned by the founders, and then watch how quickly people with central banking interests rose up and started trying to take over the monetary policy of the United States. And only with the valiant efforts that almost cost him his presidency and maybe his life, Andrew Jackson opposed these people, people like Abraham Lincoln, liberals like that who rose up in Congress to try to subvert the American way of life and independence. How quickly it degenerated it into a loss of freedom, to the point where the freedoms became so egregiously affected that by 1860, there was almost no solution available except for all-out war, which is actually what occurred during the War of Northern Aggression, where the North valiantly, victoriously decided to be the tyrants and suppress the people of the South and all Americans, frankly, including those in the North who sympathized with the Southern position. We see, folks, in the first 80 years, an absolute degeneracy and degradation of our freedoms and rights and liberties as Americans. In just the first 80 years, a tremendous expansion of government power from the time of Jefferson up through Abraham Lincoln. And since then, it's only got worse. We're now involved with the League of Nations. Our money is based on a completely fiat currency system that means fiat meaning out of nothing. We have there's nothing backing our money supply, our money system other than the good faith efforts or trust that people have in these funny pieces of green and pink paper we have in our pockets. In addition to that, we have all sorts of welfare programs. We have Americans with Disability Act. We have environmentalist acts. Regulations that are overly burdensome to anybody who would try to do business in the United States. Marginal tax rates are high, and we pay something like 52 different taxes. I read a list about a week or so ago on the Christian Worldview show of taxes that people pay now, and they're far more than have ever been in history. You spend, if you're a filer of 1040 tax returns and an average consumer, you're spending pretty close to half of the year laboring just to pay the federal government for the things that it imposes upon you, the duties that it imposes on you. That is an incredible degradation of freedom. So I ask again, is there a time in American history that through the political process, through voting, through getting on juries, through putting the right people in office, through creating new rules and regulations locally or nationally, that you've actually gained more freedom, more liberty than you had before, and reduced the size of government and the scope and power and the extensiveness of government? I think you're going to have to be honest and say, no, it's getting worse all the time. Little by little, things are being chipped away from us, and it's come to a point now where even though we thought it was horrible 30 years ago, those who were patriotic or loving lovers of liberty, it's far worse now. And here, sadly, on Christian Worldview, we have to report to you that it's the gullible Christian right who has put into power a man like George W. Bush, who has given lip service to many things that we who are Christians hold dear, and yet has refused to truly act on them in our favor. Instead, he's brought us more tyranny, less or fewer rights, greater loss of liberty, the destruction and mayhem of people in other countries such as Iraq through his phony wars, the continued promulgation of phony wars like the drug war, and far more things that are just astounding to us and should be astounding to anyone who loves liberty, including things like relations with China, where his Colin Powell friend or associate last year slipped up and said, well, we really don't think the people of Taiwan should be doing what they're doing. They ought to go back under the communists. I'm telling you, folks, George Bush is not the right guy for the Christians. He's not the man of the hour to help bring liberty back to this nation. And frankly, folks, the only way I've ever seen in history, just speaking from an academic point of view, the only time I've ever seen true liberty ever be achieved is when there's a fight, when there's some sort of overthrow, coup, revolution, and much like the founding of our own great nation, until we throw the bums out and actually set up people with principle that are willing to uphold liberty in the land, you're going to have the scoundrels come in eventually into the political process. the parasites, those who don't want to work but prefer to take off a bit of the labor of other people so that they can enjoy political privilege and power. These are the kind of people that will come in and eventually take over our political structure, leaving us with less liberty or fewer liberties all the time. Sad and tragic as it may be, the only hope we have is for some sort of new secession, some sort of new rebellion against these folks. How can we do it? I don't know. I'm not preaching revolution to you folks. I'm just saying, let's be honest. The political process just has not worked. And if we continue to think and play as if it's going to work, we're fooling ourselves. We've got to look for other solutions and other means to do it. And I'm not sure what that is right now, but we need to throw that on the table. Should Christians be involved with it? Absolutely. As far as I'm concerned, it must be the case. Christians should lead the way instead of being the gullible pawns and peons of the Republican administration that plays them like a well-tuned fiddle, knowing exactly their every moves and manipulating them into helping them win elections and helping them exhume more tyranny, even tyranny that died long ago, and inflict it upon the American public. This is the Tyranny Response Network you're listening to. We are responding to tyranny. We welcome your phone calls to 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Questions and comments may also be sent by email to questions@policyofliberty.net. This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to TRN. Tired of superficial and dull talk radio? Try some ear candy for thinking people. Listen to Liberty Minute with Dr. John Coben.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth. Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NP Pros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's nppros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.nppros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network. Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview.
Welcome back to the show. This is Dr. John Coben, and you're listening to Christian Worldview. Just one comment on the 501c3 issue, since Mr. Gene Papke, the Constitution Party, has just made a commercial for that fact that the TRN is allowed to get a tax-deductible status. Well, that's important for some people, and I want to explain something very clearly. We are opposed to, generally, any kind of government privilege. In fact, I'm personally in favor of encouraging churches to not be involved with the 501c3 movement. In other words, not have the church affiliated as a privileged position under 501c3 of the Internal Revenue Code. The reason for that is when you get a sort of a government privilege to do anything, you have a corresponding duty to it, and government has been able to use that 501c3 status to terrorize churches and accuse them of being involved with hate crimes and hate speech and therefore pastors should be able not be able to talk about what they want to talk about, whether it's condemning homosexuality or sodomy as a sin that is not acceptable before God. Of course, people who are sodomites and homosexuals can certainly be saved and need to be preached to. We're not saying that. But for a pastor to go up and be able to say, God says it's wrong to be a homosexual, is just too much for some people, and therefore considered hate speech. The IRS, because of it, 501c3, is allowed to regulate, it believes, the churches under it, and because of the authority that they have, they are being able to lord it over churches nowadays. That's the greatest reason why churches should not have anything to do with the 501c3 status. It seems that that whole idea came up in just the last 50 or 60 years. I believe it was Peter Kershaw, I believe, was talking about this on the Tyranny Response Network, a recorded show. Some of you may have heard that. However, there are a number of people who still, because they file tax returns and want a deduction for things they can donate to the Tyranny Response Network, can use a private 501c3 TRU, the Tyranny Response Unit, I believe it's Tyranny Response Unit Enterprises, and these Tyranny Response Unit Enterprises can receive funds and give these people a tax deduction. Now, the Tyranny Response Network receives direct benefit from this, but it's actually not a 501c3 itself. It just happens to use this conduit that's out in Texas on the side. So if that makes sense to you folks, we have that set up not because we like the idea of government control, privilege, 501c3. In fact, we're opposed to it entirely for churches and for most people. But since some people are filers that want to make sure that they can provide a tax deduction for themselves on their 1040 forms, we give them an opportunity to do so, especially because corporations are generally required to file corporation returns as excise tax on privilege, and they're the ones who are donating this paper and need to have that deduction. So just a word of explanation. Some people might be scratching their head. Why would a radio station, a network, and a show like Christian Worldview be encouraging such a thing? Well, folks, we do need the support of listeners, and this is one way we can get it, not to be pragmatic, but it is simply the way things have been set up here at the Tyranny Response Unit and the Tyranny Response Network. We're glad you joined us today for the show. Our phone number again is 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Questions and comments may also be sent by email to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If you're listening to this show at any time between 7:30 to 9 o'clock in the morning Eastern Time, you're listening to a recorded broadcast. And as it is a recorded broadcast, the phone lines obviously are not open for you to call in, but the email is always available to be sent 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we do appreciate the emails that we've been able to receive from folks here at the Tyranny Response Network. Well, Christian Worldview is a special show because we're trying to help people who are Christians think better about the issues of the day, to not be blindsided and gullible as they often have tended to be in history, at least recent history, but to look back to the way the founding fathers envisioned our great nation and try to establish again the principles that they stood for in the land. Remember, many of the founding fathers, although many were not Christians, many, if not most of them, were Christians and even pastors, willing to encourage their congregations from the pulpit to fight against the tyrant, King George, and to overthrow him. And Christian pastors today are so far from being willing to do that, having adopted a faulty view of public policy, a faulty theology of public policy from the scriptures, in my opinion, is primarily on account of the doctrine of the revitalized or reshaped divine right of King's view, that people believe that the government must be obeyed under all circumstances with almost no exception, unless they tell you to worship a false god, abort your first child, or perhaps in other certain circumstances, stop preaching the gospel, for instance. On all other instances, they need to go along to get along. Their government's ordained by God, and therefore it must be good, a good thing. It's a bizarre concept because God ordains all things, the Westminster Confession says, and the Scripture teaches as well. And that includes the devil, the devil's angels, and the evil things that go on in life. Yet somehow they jump to the wrong conclusion that any state that's in there, including George W. Bush, and his the leadership of states like George W. Bush must be good and must be helping the kingdom of God and therefore under God's ordination. Nothing could be further from the truth, folks. God ordains evil things, and Christians cannot support them. We have to oppose tyranny, and I think there is a time and a place where Christians need to rebel against the wickedness of wicked authorities. We've come up to our 8 o'clock break. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview on the Tyranny Response Network, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of 6 homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And welcome back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We're here on the Tyranny Response Network, exposing more and more tyranny all the time and trying to help you think better, especially those of you who are Christians, so that we won't be misled and be gullible like sheep into accepting the wiles and tyrannies that are imposed and thrust upon us by the major parties and the major news media. And as speaking of that, we have on CBS News this morning Condoleezza Rice saying, "Iran strike is not on the agenda." Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice said, "A U.S. attack on Iran is simply not on the agenda, despite the United States' continued criticism of Iran's human rights record and potential nuclear weapons." Rice would not say whether the United States supports a change of government in Iran, although Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage says, as expressly said, that the regime change is not the U.S. goal. Well, it's just so funny the way they state this sort of stuff, not on the agenda. Well, George, what do you think we should have on our agenda for this year or this month or this week? Well, let's see. We could pop off a few guys in North Korea and then head down to Iran and maybe sack a few of those guys, blow up a couple mosques, and maybe murder a few thousand people, stir things up a little bit and let them know we're alive. And maybe if that causes us some political benefit, maybe if there's something over there that we can gain by having such an attack, maybe on the agenda 6 months from now, we'll go ahead and put on our goal to go ahead and invade them. After all, our military is not going to be much more use in Iraq. We'll just keep the base there, and it's close enough to Iran. Let's go ahead and try an invasion then. Let's just see how things are going along. Or maybe we'll need a little extra push you know, for bigger government. We haven't quite got everything we want as far as being able to violate people's rights through the Patriot Act and so forth. Maybe we need a little extra terror. Let's go bug some more people and give them some more incentive to come on over and attack us, or at least stir up enough Americanism and nationalism that we'll go over and become the imperialists of the world that we've are so good at being ever since in the last 20 years. We've been invading every place that doesn't quite fit our goals. Well, at any rate, I don't know why they speak this way, but it just seems very odd that they have an agenda and that the Iran strike is not on the agenda. Well, maybe next week it will be. Well, we're considering that for other things. Right now our agenda is too full to worry about the Iran attack. We're just doing other things first. Whatever. These people don't have any clue as to what the Constitution is all about, the Declaration of Independence, what America is all about. And especially those of us who are Christians, we should not be warmongers. We need to have the right, I think, and I believe this at any rate, some Christians don't, of self-defense. And government is our collective agent to help us defend ourselves against against those who would prey on us, against predators, whether foreign or domestic. That's what we have a military for. But the military is not a welfare institution that goes to deliver food or environmental care to other countries. The military is not simply our constabulary or police force that we go around the world anytime we want to boss somebody around and attack somebody, causing thousands of American lives and a lot of dollars lost and a lot of loss to the economy as these people are taken out of productive employment and put into a war effort. And yet it seems like the current Christian mind is, well, this is our government. We like the military in general. Let's go ahead and support whatever they do. Folks, this isn't right. We need to support peace. We don't want, and we realize wars will not end until Christ returns. That's part of the Christian worldview. But we don't want to promote war in the world or bloodshed or the destruction of people's property in other countries just because we have the might. It's just wrong for us to be warmongers. We need to be those who support peace. I'm not saying we don't have a strong military to defend ourselves. I'm saying just the opposite. I'm saying a strong military uses restraint and self-control. These are Christian principles, and not is simply there at the whim of any president who wants a little more power or to make a point to go and attack some nation. And there's just simply no reason, folks, I'm sorry, for us to be carrying on this ridiculous war in Iraq. We need to get the troops out of Iraq, pull them back to the United States immediately. There is no reason for us to be involved over there and wreaking mayhem and havoc in that country. If they really wanted Saddam Hussein, go in and get him another way. Let's not kill hundreds of thousands of Iraqi soldiers and innocent civilians over there. Some people say as many as 500,000 innocent people have been killed between the various Iraqi wars in the last 10, 15 years. And that's just appalling. It's just an appalling loss of human life for no reason other than the political power benefits of the Bush administrations 1 and 2, as well as the Clinton administration, I guess, to some extent. Why don't they go to the Sudan if they're so concerned about human rights? There's a lot more violations there than there were in Iraq, or at least just as many. And you can't say, well, I'm there in Iraq for human rights issues or to spread democracy when you're not doing it in other places that desperately need it. There was another reason why they went to Iraq, folks. It might be just oil, might be just payoffs, it might be the political benefits that George W. Bush and others in the administration got. But don't believe the lie, folks. We don't need to be over there. It's none of our business what goes on in that country. We can always help people who are hurting, but to go in as we did as a constabulary force was simply wrong-headed, foolish, and very costly to us. Well, after that small commentary on CBS News, we come up against a very short break on the Tyranny Response Network. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to TRN.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NP Pros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, NPROS, as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals. That's npros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Well, on recent shows, folks, we've had the opportunity to talk about some very interesting history that's been revised and revised again. In fact, I was listening to the Tyranny Response Network this morning on my way in, and there was an excellent lecture being presented by Pastor John Weaver about some little-known aspects, at least little-known to modern mainstream textbooks and government school graduates, about the war between the states, or the war of northern aggression, about Lincoln's position on slavery, and Lincoln's willingness to allow slavery to exist so long as the tariff barrier, or the amount of tariff, would be raised above 10% to benefit the war governors, that is, the industrialists in the North, the pals of Lincoln, who boosted him into power. And it's interesting for us to recognize that Lincoln was an absolute racist. Lincoln was a man who only tried to free slaves where he had no authority to do so, and places where he had authority to free them, he did not do so, like the states of Maryland, Kentucky, Delaware, Missouri, and what later would become West Virginia. Slavery was legal in all of those states, by the way, during the entire war between the states, from 1861 to 65. They had to wait until the 13th Amendment was passed to have those slaves be freed. General Grant said he said good help's hard to find, and so he did not free his slaves until he was forced to by the amendment. And Robert E. Lee freed his slaves before the war started. And Pastor Weaver is doing does a brilliant job on that recorded expose to expose what was going on with the Lincoln administration and the whole feeling about slavery at the time. Well, in addition to that, we've had a listener like Gus send us a quote off of the plaque in the Fort Sumter National Monument that the government put there with a speech that Lincoln gave in 1864, where he talked about the white man being superior to the black man, and that indeed slavery, that slaves should never be brought to have the political and civil freedoms and liberties that that white people do. Just incredible. And then yesterday, or the day before, we also read this article by Robert N. Groom's Dixie Censored Subject, Black Slaveholders or Slave Owners, where he talks about people of color who were free before the war between the states in the early and mid 1800s who actually owned other black people owning other black people. And they pointed out that the research at the University of Virginia, at Duke University, and elsewhere in Louisiana found that there was a disproportionately higher number of free black people who owned other blacks and became very wealthy on account of it, to the tune that while 4.8% of Southern whites, white males, owned other slaves or owned slaves, 28% of free blacks in the South, and there were many free blacks in the South, or persons of color, owned black slaves. Little known facts of history. Well, again, here today we have an article that someone emailed in. I appreciate people emailing me interesting articles, by the way. We have an article written about, this actually came in from Greg from the Vicksburg Post, July 11th, 1999, Black Confederates in Vicksburg, Mississippi. Blacks also fought on the side of the South, as they did on the side of the North, by the way. But again, a lot of people get the impression, oh, black people, you know, in the South, they, you know, especially the free ones, they wanted, or the slaves, they wanted to be free. But slaves and free people voluntarily, free blacks, fought on the side of the South because they knew they were fighting for the liberty and for liberty, for truth, and for their way of life. Even those who were enslaved did not want to leave the security that their masters provided for them in many instances. Now, many did run away and want to be free. That's also true. But people have the wrong impression when they say that there was just a lot of beatings going on and it was a horrible time in history. Let me interject here that that historians and economists, and I tend to favor the latter, obviously, historians and economists have long fought, I'd say maybe for the last 40 years, over the issue of how slavery was or what the kind of lifestyle people who were in slavery had during the antebellum or before the war, South especially. The entire country in the early 1800s and the late 1700s had slavery. I don't know if you folks realize that, but slavery was not only confined to the South. Well, eventually, state by state in the North, they began to make slavery illegal. And, of course, in doing so, the people who had their slaves in the North needed to free them or do the right thing, which most of them did, sell their slaves to Southerners. It becomes illegal, so you just sell it, get your money back from the slave you paid for, and sell it to the South. You know, good job, folks. Well, at any rate, there was a book written called Time on the Cross early in the around the mid-1970s by a couple of authors, a couple of economists called Fogel and Ingerman. And Robert Fogel is at, I believe, Harvard, the Department of Economics at Harvard now. And I think Engelman is elsewhere, maybe the University of Chicago. I don't remember exactly. But they both won, or at least Robert Fogel won, the Nobel Prize for his work here and elsewhere. And what they basically said was, look, revisionist historians have distorted the truth here. Slavery as a moral, it was a morally repugnant institution, but for most people, it was simply a business decision to own slaves. We're not talking about the family that had a household servant, the one guy that did things around the house. And, of course, that person was far better off than the Irish who would come over here and live in squalor in New York, even though they were free. And it's better to be free, perhaps, and poor than to have a good life in the house as a slave. But nevertheless, these people's quality of life, standard of living as one a solo slave was far higher than the masses that came out of these poor Irish. Well, at any rate, we see in the South that those who chose to have large chain gangs or many people who were enslaved did so as a business proposition. They bought slaves for the equivalent current dollars of $35,000 to $50,000 a piece, and they invested that capital in order to increase their harvest of cotton or tobacco or whatever it might be. Now, again, we're not talking about the evil and the moral repugnance of slavery here. We're talking about it as a business decision for what these people were doing back at that time. They were investing large amounts of capital in buying other folks. Well, what do you suppose you would do if you had a business decision like that today? Instead of buying black slaves, you're going to buy machinery or you're going to buy other kinds of capital that would help you produce a product that you could sell. Let's say that you know, several of us go in with a $50,000 or $100,000 investment, and you know, it's a big chunk of money for us. But we put the money in, and we buy hundreds of thousands of dollars of machinery. Who of us is then willing to go out the next day with a baseball bat and just start beating up the machines, just smashing stuff? Well, you'd say, well, somebody might do that. Well, that's true. You're always going to have someone who's insane or not doing anything economically in terms of a efficient manner of maximizing profits and minimizing costs. But for the most part, business people, especially those who stay in business, do not destroy their capital. So for these economists, Fogel and Ingerman, it didn't make sense theoretically that the Uncle Tom Cabin version of rape, demoralizing slaves, of whipping slaves and constantly being brutal towards them could possibly be maintainable over the long run. It just couldn't happen. It was a false idea, theoretically. So they set out empirically to discover how slaves were treated in the South in this book, Time on the Cross. And what they found empirically was a vast amount of evidence to show that Uncle Tom's Cabin kind of slave abuse was rare. It was rather the exception than the rule. and that for the most part, the slaves, although they were in subjection of servitude, did not suffer nearly as much at the hand of the slave owner. So we end up with this book coming out critical of the received revisionist history of the historians. In response to that, the historians were very upset. A rift developed between economics and historians that has never been repaired, and they responded with their own version of the Southern calamity and of domestic institution of slavery called Reckoning with Slavery, another book written in the late 70s. The economists still, as far as I can tell, concerned, held the day, not only because the empirical evidence was there, because reasonably, logically, analytically, scientifically, it doesn't make sense that people would invest money, huge sums of money, in business capital and the slaves, and just in order to have a good time and destroy them. And I'll tell you a story when we come back, one of my favorite stories from Dr. Walter Williams. But we have a quick break coming up, and I'll continue on this discussion when we return on the Tyranny Response Network.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but he has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as he did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead. Make your day.
Well, we sure hope we're making your day today. Our phone number here at the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben is 864-201-6955, 864-201-6955, and we welcome your phone calls here to discuss these important issues of the day. You can also reach us by email 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, at policyofliberty.net. by sending your emails to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. Well, I was telling you the story that about black slaves in the South and their plight, and the discussion between economists and historians about what life was really like for these hapless and wretched folks, quotes and folks in a wretched condition. We're very opposed to tyranny, and obviously very opposed to slavery on the Tyranny Response Network. We're also opposed to the tyranny of those who would want to revise history and make us believe fairy tales and falsehoods about our not only our own history, but our history's nation's philosophy on the American ideals, which they seem to be doing such a good job of destroying through the public education system and government schooling. Well, at any rate, few people know, as Walter Williams pointed out, that America has not always had, of course, highways and railroads to transport goods. And before 1850, in particular, most transportation that was done between the Ohio Valley, that's the other side of the Appalachian chain, and the eastern seaboard was done through canals. And they had a system of locks that allowed the water level to rise and ships to pass over from the east coast all the way to the Ohio Valley over the Appalachians. And there were several canals all up and down the east coast from up in the north, New England, all the way down, or close to New England, all the way down to, in the areas of the south. Atlanta actually was one of the first rail stations because of its strategic location and easy access to get over the Appalachian Range. All of these cities had sprung up as a matter of being transportation hubs on either side of the mountain range here, which was a formidable physical feature that the pioneers had to overcome. Well, at any rate, you might say to yourself, who dug the canals? You know, who especially in the South, who do you suppose went through all the labor to dig the canals so that the boats could pass from one side to the other? And the common response is, well, obviously you had slaves in the South. The slaves must have done it. Well, you know what? They didn't. And there's a reason they didn't. If you're and I'll tell you who did. It was the Irish. The Irish came in because they were poor, starving, came to New York, and were willing to work for anything. They had no skills, and so for 10 cents a day, you could hire an Irishman to dig a ditch. And the Southerners would bring down Irishmen from New York in droves to dig these canals. Why didn't they use their slaves? Slave labor is free, right? Well, that's an economic fallacy, folks. It's not free. The opportunity cost of owning a slave is very high, especially when you're figuring it's $35,000 to $50,000 in our current dollars to buy one. What would you rather do, pay 10 cents a day to an Irishman or use your black slave? Well, if you think about it, if you're out in the South, especially digging around, there's a lot of dangers there, not only from alligators, but various poisonous snakes. I think there are 9 different poisonous snakes in South Carolina alone. Some people don't realize we have very large eastern diamondback rattlesnakes. You have water moccasins, copperheads, different snakes that are deadly. And there weren't the hospital systems and medical treatments available in the early 1800s like we have today. And so if you're a black slaver out there and got bit and died, you had a considerable loss on your hands financially. But if an Irishman got bit, well, he dies, so what? You know, nobody loses anything. All that's lost is you don't have to pay him is 10 cents a day to work. And so economically, we see the incentive people had to employ Irishmen rather than black slaves. And that is clearly what happened in the canal building era. And that gives us more reason to believe that the time on the cross version of Fogel and Ingerman was actually correct and the other was not. Uncle Tom's Cabin is just one of those myths that are thrust upon us by the revisionist historian. Well, getting back to this article then, we were sent back, sent this article from the Vicksburg Post. Somebody on Gray Echo sent it in, Greg, I believe, and Black Confederates from Vicksburg, Mississippi is the name of this, as a subject of the article. The name Ephraim Robertson certainly isn't widely known, but he earned a place in local history. He was the last Black Confederate veteran in Vicksburg. Robertson was about 70 years old when he applied for a pension on August 20th, 1914, at the Warren County Courthouse. His application, which was approved, was signed by Chancery Clerk Jefferson Davis Laughlin. Born in Mississippi, Robertson had been a servant in the Fairchild family in Raymond, going off to war with the Raymond Vencibles, of which T.W. and J.C. Fairchild were members. He was later part of the Bradford Scouts, commanded by Jefferson Davis Bradford, a nephew of the Confederate president. When the war ended, Robertson was in Clinton, Louisiana. V. Blaine Russell, who penned the column in Vicksburg-esque for many years in the Vicksburg Post, wrote, "The old cabin was standing in charred ruin when I passed it a fortnight ago." That's 2 weeks ago. It looked a little worse than when old F. Robertson dwelled there, and his old age as the last Negro Confederate pensioner in Vicksburg was so far as I know. For years, Robertson lived in a small cabin on the northwest corner of Jackson and Adams Streets, but moved farther out, open wood, to where Fifth North began. Robertson had worked as a roustabout on the steamboats. Many of Vicksburgers can remember F. Robertson in his old age sitting there in a suburb on the cabin porch, peacefully playing his accordion. Russell wrote, "The clipping is updated but undated, but probably was printed in the mid-1930s. Robertson is thought to have died in the early 1920s, though he was the last surveying Black Confederate. He was one of many African Americans who served the South here. Pension applications for about 30 local blacks are in the old courthouse museum files." Isn't that an interesting story? How often do we hear about in our public school textbooks or government school indoctrination programs or even in Christian schools who seem to be so willing to be conformed to the federal idea that black people not only own slaves, they also fought in the Southern armies against the North, those who were purportedly going to free them, because it wasn't about slavery primarily, folks. It was about Northerners being able to control what happens in Southern states and especially raise the tariff rate up way above 10% to benefit Northern industrialists and enrich the people of the North. That's what it was about. And many who were intelligent black people realized this was wrong and they fought on the side of the Confederates. This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, trying to disinfect you, your mind, from what has been thrown in there by the modern media, the modern mainstream media, and your television and other talk shows on the Tyranny Response Network. And we hope we've helped do that a little bit today. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of 6 homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Capping the end of the work week here on the Tyranny Response Network, the fourth week, finishing the fourth full week of Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We're just very happy you've been able to be with us this morning. Or if you're listening on the recorded broadcast, we're happy that that's been, we've had that available for you to do so, and we hope it's been instructive, informative, and helping you hone your own skills and thinking and think about something new today. Our phone number here at the station, 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. We welcome your questions and comments also by email to questions@policyofliberty.net. Well, before we get the show gets away from us, we want to definitely read a couple of quotes from P.J. O'Rourke. We've been doing that all this week and some of last week as well. And P.J. O'Rourke, in all the trouble in the world, the lighter side of famine, pestilence, destruction, and death, says this: "It takes a lot of weapons to do good works, as Richard the Lionhearted could have told us, and this is not just a Somali problem. We have poverty and deprivation in our own country. Try standing unarmed on a street corner in Compton, California, handing out $20 bills, and see how long you last." He also says in the same book, "And biotechnology is a worry. What if they take genetic material from wet noodles and a blowfish and splice it into a politician chromosomes and create the Clinton administration?" Indeed. And he also says, in All the Trouble in the World, "Politics is the business of getting power and privilege without possessing merit. A politician is anyone who asks individuals to surrender part of their liberty, their power and privilege, to state, masses, mankind, planet Earth, or whatever. The state, this state, those masses, that mankind, and the planet will be run by politicians, and we appreciate the satire, humor, and creative thinking of P.J. O'Rourke. Not in everything he says, because he doesn't have, as a non-Christian, a vocabulary and language and way of writing that we would always appreciate. But if we separate the precious from the vile, as God told Jeremiah, we can, I think, attain a few tidbits, jewels of thought from P.J. O'Rourke. We've also want to continue, as we started earlier in the week on Monday, our economics minutes. We found that so many Christians, in fact, not just Christians, but non-Christians alike, and if you're listening to this show and as a non-Christian, we appreciate you being here. We know that you're challenged by what's being said here, and far more than the tripe and vulgarity and superficiality of so much other talk radio that you can listen to. And here's an opportunity you have on this show to listen to some deep thinking, and we appreciate you listening to the show. But Christians and non-Christians alike suffer from a dearth of understanding of simple, basic economics. And if you just had a better grasp, people just had a better grasp of simple economics, a lot of the troubles that they would find in the world and policy would become apparent as to the cause and the solution as well. And in order to alleviate the ignorance and help people understand better a little bit about economics, I've picked up a textbook that I'm using in my own homeschool with my own children called The Economic Way of Thinking by Paul Hain. Professor Hain probably put together the best mainstream textbook in economics that you can find out there today. And in chapter one, he has several questions I think are very of great interest to us to ask and think about to help us learn to think in terms of economics correctly. Question 11 of chapter 1 says this: in the early 1980s, when the Polish people had to stand in long lines in order to purchase most consumer goods, the government ordered that every third place in line be reserved for pregnant women or disabled persons. This was presumably done to reduce their discomfort. Do you think it resulted in less standing in line by pregnant women? Do you suppose that any women became pregnant in order to be able to cut in the long lines? Now, you've got to imagine it, folks. You've got people that lived much in the way we do here, husbands and wives, the family relationship, and so forth. And then you have a communist state who is rationing goods. And these communist states, by rationing the goods, are saying, look, there's not that many things available. There's more needs that we can possibly meet. But we will try to help when we have the provisions. You'll have to come and queue up, stand in these long lines, and eventually you'll be able to get the good, hopefully. Well, you hope you can get the good if you wait long enough. Well, as people began waiting in lines, somebody looking on thought, this is just horrible that these women who are pregnant and so uncomfortable, especially in late term, standing in these lines. Well, how can we alleviate their plight? And so they pass a rule saying, well, what we'll do is every third person standing in line must be a pregnant woman until there are no more pregnant women left to stand in line. And so they literally bumped them up in the line. Now, before this rule, you can imagine how the family relationship was in the evening. You can think to them, the husband and wife having a conversation, well, we really need to eat some bread and some cheese. That's going to require standing in line. And you probably didn't go this way. Honey, sweetheart, I know you're pregnant, but would you mind go standing in line so I can do something else during the day? I know it's hard on you to sit there for 5 or 6 hours in line, but would you go ahead and do that? I'm going to go off and do some other kind of work or relax or read a book or whatever it might be, go fishing. Probably didn't happen that way. Probably in the natural course of things, the husbands there would say, honey, that's a long line. It's too hard for you to wait in that line. It's just overly burdensome. Why don't you stay here, see if you can possibly do anything you can in the house? Although, you know, being pregnant, if you need, and at this late stage, if you need to relax, don't worry if the house doesn't get quite cleaned and the meals don't get cooked. We'll be all right. Just I'll go stand in line. You just take it easy here. That's probably what happened, folks. I mean, that's the normal course of things in a marital relationship. And so the government passes this rule all of a sudden that says every third person has to be a pregnant woman. Well, let's think about these questions again. It was done, presumably, to reduce the discomfort of these pregnant ladies. Do you think it resulted in less standing in line by pregnant women or more? Well, the initial answer one might give is, well, less, because obviously if they could just move right up in line, they'd do so, and we wouldn't have to, we wouldn't have to see them so uncomfortable. But as a matter of fact, in economic theory, what happened was probably just the opposite. honey, look, I know it's uncomfortable for you to stand in line, but if I go to work right now, I can make more money than standing in line and make our lives better off. Would you mind jumping out there, even though I know it feels bad for you to do so, stand in line, get into, you know, the third place, every third position as early as possible. And in droves, what would happen into this, because the incentives have changed, more pregnant women would end up spending time in line. So the answer to the question is, do you think it actually resulted in less standing in line by pregnant women? No, not at all. Do you suppose any women became pregnant in order to be able to cut into the long lines? Also could be true, depending on how bad the rationing system was and how bad people were starving. People who weren't pregnant beforehand might say, let's get pregnant. Let's get pregnant so that I can have the advantage of having less time to stand in line and we can be more productive and have more wealth in our own lives. An example of how a liberal do-good policy aimed at, a proactive policy aimed at changing behavior, ends up actually backfiring and causing more grief and misery than of the same type that it was trying to alleviate. So typical of all liberal policies. Folks, think about, just as I did, with simple analysis, how the effect of a policy will really be on society, and see if it really is going to achieve the goals that the government proposes that it will do. And think about the consequences, and you'll find quite often that these people, being ignorant of economics, don't understand how people's incentives are and how they react to different costs that are imposed upon them. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. We've come up against a quick break. I want to talk about this theme just a little bit and then get into some deep questions before the end of the show. We'll be back in just a minute.
Many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals. That's npros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And we are providing that roughage today in large quantities. Hope you're staying with us and not being bowled over by all the massive amounts of information dispelling tyranny and helping you think better as a Christian or anyone who loves liberty for that matter. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview. The phone lines are open for you to call in at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Also, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. By all means, send your emails to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. Well, we talked about the Polish situation with the pregnant women getting to cut in line or getting a better place in line when food sources and other things are being rationed, and how it doesn't work. The government's policy actually causes more misery than less misery. And that's true of most government policy, by the way. The more policy you have, the more misery you have. The more proactive policy you have, the more misery you have. I lived in Chile for almost 5 years, and became well known down there as a radical free market economist. And on several occasions, I was on the front page or somewhere in the national newspaper and got fairly well known as a university professor in economics down in Santiago. And what ended up happening there one day was a new law was proposed to try to alleviate the plight that maids were facing after they became pregnant. And it's similar to this whole Polish event. I thought I'd mention it to you. They asked me to come down and speak to the Minister of Labor about this issue. And what I had to say just absolutely astounded him. He was almost beside himself with my comments. And the reason is basically this. I stunned him with economic truth. And it's not because I have this corner of the market on economic truth. It's just because it's obvious once you understand how economic principles work that things work out the way that they do. And he had no training in economics. He had been reading a lot of Karl Marx, as they often do in those some of those schools in South America. He'd been reading a lot of other things that had nothing to do with economic theory and made no economic sense, and therefore he was in favor of this law that I'm about to tell you about. Well, the idea was this, that many women who were working as maids, it was sort of an entry-level position in Chile, and people in Chile were far better off as maids, making $300 or $400 a month than they would be in, say, Bolivia, where they get maybe 50, or Guatemala, where they have 80. So you have people pouring over the borders to try to get these maid jobs, do a good job in their households. Well, the problem is, generally there are single women who do these. Sometimes there are married women, and the husband even will work as the gardener, and the wife will work as the maid. But many times these women were single. And lo and behold, during the course of their employment, being single still, they became pregnant. And even if they were married and became pregnant, this all of a sudden caused a problem with their employment. Because obviously if you're pregnant, your ability to work slows down, and employers would just fire these folks and say, look, you got pregnant. This is not acceptable. I'm not going to have a child running around with a single parent in the house here when he's born. I need to have those maid services. That's what you're hired for these last few months. When you're really, the late term, it's going to be more difficult for you to do that. And afterward, it's going to be difficult for you to do it as well. So you're fired. Well, the government said, well, I'm going to go ahead and pass a law. Or we're going to go ahead and pass a law forcing these people to give special benefits and privileges to maids who get pregnant. Now, what do you suppose that did in the market system? Did that alleviate the plight and misery of the pregnant, potentially pregnant women, or the single maids, or did it worsen it? Well, at first glance, people think, well, it's a law passed. Now everybody's going to have to obey, and they're going to give extra special care and benefits and treatment to these single ladies. And if they get pregnant, then they're going to have to treat them better and help them have some extra time off and pay them a little bit more because they're pregnant. It had the exact opposite effect, folks, because think about it from the supply side, from the employer's perspective. You've got a choice of people you can employ, those who are married women who get pregnant and who may have mothers or grandmothers who can help care for the child when she's born, that may even have a contract with the employer that during a certain amount of time they agree that they're not going to be paid for their services while they're away, and they even have a replacement come in. You have other women who are just single, and if they got pregnant, it would be a disaster for the employer because there'd be extra costs. And then you still have other women who are past menopause and can't have children. The older maids. Well, what do you suppose happened in the market if you have all those groups of people to choose from as an employer? What kind of discrimination do you suppose would occur because of this law? Well, it should be obvious to you, just thinking through the situation a little bit, the case a little bit, that the people in Santiago in Chile began imposing tests immediately. Do you think she's past menopause? In fact, they might even ask her, look, are you still able to have children before your employer? If the answer is yes, the cost of hiring the potential cost or the expected cost of hiring that maid went up substantially. And therefore, if someone were to come in and say, is 55 years old, wanted a job, did real well, but no chance of getting pregnant, they were going to disproportionately favor hiring that person over the other. So all this rule did, although it purported to give benefits to the younger women who were single, is favor those who were already past childbearing years give more jobs to them, put more raise unemployment for those who are in the other age category, say 18 to 48 or 40, late 40s, and give a second choice category more benefits to those who might be married and already have some willingness to make an arrangement. If they do get pregnant, they'll not take pay and so forth. That's what happens, folks. It doesn't benefit the people that it really was set out to benefit, the single women who get pregnant. In fact, it just discriminated against them. It made it harder for them to get a job, made them take less money because of the potential expected cost. A stupid liberal law generated because of a lack of economics, simple economics that we can dispel, open up, show the fallacy of on the Tyranny Response Network on Christian Worldview in a matter of 5 minutes. I hope it makes sense to you. You need to begin to think, folks, economically in a way that is consistent with economic theory and logic. Economics is a valuable science. It helps us think correctly, especially when it comes down to public policies. Proactive public policies, in the main, hurt people. They don't help people. And here on the Tyranny Response Network, we want to help you think. We want to help people. We want to be free. We want to help us get rid of the shackles of the state and the evils which are inflicted upon us by it and responding to their tyrannies. This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead. Make your day.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Welcome back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. Telephone number 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. This is the last segment in the closing of the week, the fourth week of Christian Worldview on the Tyranny Response Network. So glad you've been listening to the show this morning. And we encourage you to email us and send questions and comments to questions@policyofliberty.net. Also, visit policyofliberty.net. Scroll down to the bottom of the webpage where you'll find a couple of links. One which says Deep Questions for Dr. Coben's radio show. That's 18 questions that I've formulated that you can read offline, respond to by email, and we can discuss on the air. These are the great questions that that come up with respect to the theology of the Christian worldview as it relates to public policy, the nature of the state, and so forth, as well as another link to find out what view of public policy seems right to you. There are four views, Christian views of public policy, and if you take the 15-question quiz there, self-guided, self-directed quiz, you will find, as many of our listeners already have, a very useful tool for helping you hone your thinking and understanding where you are as far as thinking about the state, the nature of the state, the role and response of Christians to the state and its public policies. And I think it will be very informative for you, as many have found it to be. Well, anyway, jumping back to the other link for the moment, I would like to read a couple of questions on off of the deep questions link. Question number 3 says, how would the statements of the Apostles Paul and Peter in Romans 13, 1 through 7, Titus 3, 1, and 1 Peter 2, 13 through 17 have differed if they had been modern-day Americans, those apostles had been modern-day Americans, rather than under the Roman state? Why is the study of history, economics, political science, world religion, and philosophy important for proper biblical understanding? I think they would have differed dramatically because the rights and privileges assigned to citizens under the Roman situation were completely different to ours that we enjoy as Americans. In addition to that, the amount of knowledge and the understanding of philosophy and one's own understandings of how public policy should be enacted or should exist have dramatically changed. The state under Rome was not a welfare state. The idea that people have rights to an education or a livable wage or medical care or air conditioning or any other thing did not exist under the Roman state. Paul did not have to deal with the proactive, positive, what we call positive rights theories that philosophers have come up with since then. And because of that, he did not have to deal with those particular problems. The same thing is true in theology, by the way. While they dealt with the problem of the Gnostics or the problem of the Nicolaitans or the Jezebelites or the Judaizers, the heresies of the day, they did not obviously deal with the heresies that would come up afterwards because they didn't exist then. It doesn't mean the Bible can't speak to all heresies that arise. It just means that they didn't specifically speak about them in those days, and we have to make application based on the principles of the Bible to dispel those heresies. Well, the same thing is true with public policy. Just because public policy didn't exist at the time doesn't mean the principles of the Bible can't be applied to understanding public policy from a Christian point of view. And Paul and Peter, I think, would have responded very differently in those passages. They would have told Christians that welfarism, that is the welfare state, is a wrong-headed system built on an immoral basis that cannot be justified either in terms of liberty or in terms of the Word of God, and that Christians must rebel, revolt against, passively resist, or even actively resist any kind of notions of proactive policy or the welfare state and should stand firm in it. Taxation was very different back then than it is now. Would they have said that we ought to go ahead and just be involved in any kind of tax scheme that comes the way down the pike from the state? I don't think so. I don't believe that we can just take the statements in Romans 13 and apply them across the board to all taxes under all circumstances. You'll find any kind of taxes ranging from lotteries today to the Social Security tax to the income tax to gasoline taxes. All of them have different characteristics, and we can't just paint them all with the same brush because they're all called taxes. So I do believe that Christians they would tell Christians something very different today than they would else otherwise. And that's why the study of history, economics, political science, world religion, and so forth are so important for proper biblical interpretation. If we don't understand the way that the system dynamics of the day were, and we don't understand why our system dynamics are different, we're never going to get past the roadblocks that will be thrown up to us by simply looking at a statement that applied to one culture that may or may not be equally applied or in the same way applied to another culture like today. And we'll always be having a degraded and degenerate theology. Christian worldview and the study of public policy, our understanding here at the Tyranny Response Network, is to try to help you apply those passages, the principles of those passages, so that we end up having the proper approach to Christian life and to understanding of the state and our relationship to it. Well, I was going to read another question, but obviously we've run out of time here on the show this morning. We'll pick this up on these deep questions again tomorrow. We welcome your questions and comments overnight by email. And we thank you for listening to the Tyranny Response Network this week and to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll see you again on Monday morning, and God bless you.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on TRN. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.